now, with the latest from the world of technology, this is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenwick.
I quite like the number of apps that are already available.
Tech Guide.
The iPad 2 still beats just about everything on the market. The new iPad has just kicked away even further.
Tech Guide.
I quite enjoyed using it. Great design. The operating system worked hand in hand with the hardware as well.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is the Tech Guide Podcast.
This is obviously a hot-selling device.
Tech Guide.
You know, we want them to be light. We want them to be portable. And this one's very fast with i7 and i5 processors.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenwick.
Hello and welcome to Tech Guide episode 32. Thanks for listening and thanks for downloading. My name is Stephen Fenwick, editor of techguide.com.au, and it's been another big week in consumer technology. Lots to talk about on this episode, including the rumored PlayStation 4 and Apple introducing a new 128 gigabyte iPad. In our reviews, we'll cover the new Navman system designed just for truck drivers, a new app and sensor that can tell you when to water your plants, and we'll check out a new iPad puzzle game called The Room. In our Tech Guide interview, we'll be chatting to BlackBerry Australia's Managing Director, Matthew Ball, about the new BlackBerry operating system and touchscreen devices, as well as the company's chances against the iPhone and Android. That was a great interview. Yeah, you'll enjoy that one later on in the program. We'll be answering also your tech questions on the Tech Guide Help Desk, and it's all brought to you by our proud sponsors, Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi products. All of that right here on Tech Guide. Well, there was a very cryptic invitation issued by Sony for February 20. That's just under 3 weeks away. And all indications are that this device, this event, which takes place in New York, is all about the new PlayStation 4. Sony has said that we'll be seeing the future at this special event. And, of course, the internet went into rumor overdrive speculating on what this product may be. And I think it's probably the worst-kept secret at the moment that it is, in fact, the new PlayStation 4. The Wall Street Journal actually came out and just blatantly said it will be the PlayStation 4. When a paper like the Wall Street Journal says something like that, you know they've got some pretty reliable information. Well, PlayStation, or Sony, I should say, has released a teaser video, a 45-second video that is nothing but references to the PlayStation, including the familiar symbols, the triangle, circle, cross, and square, and just what appears to be close-ups of a very slick new product. Well, it's obviously going to be the PlayStation 4. It's been a little while since we've had an update to the PlayStation. PS3's been around since 2006. Would you believe? And it's gone through a few iterations. It's been shrinking over the years. There's been, I think, three different versions of the iPad, including the very latest, which was introduced back in September last year, which was smaller than the PS3 Slim that came before it. What's going to be in the PlayStation 4? Well, plenty of speculation. Of course, it'll be an entirely new design. There has been some speculation about whether the device will still retain an optical drive. My opinion is that it definitely will retain an optical drive because for many years, it may still be the case now, when the PlayStation 3 was released, it was around the time where Blu-ray disc was starting to come to be known by consumers, and it became and probably still is the most popular Blu-ray player on the market. So I don't think Sony will want that to go away anytime soon by replacing it with a larger internal hard drive, for example. And in terms of games, what better way to download these large format games, these HD games, than on a disc? The sheer size of those files requires a Blu-ray disc. So my money is on them retaining an optical drive so that not only can you play all of your older PlayStation 3 games, but also all the future PS4 games, as well as the Blu-ray disc movies, of course, and 3D Blu-ray disc movies as well. Now, what else will be on there? I think it's a safe bet that 4K may have something to do with it. I think this the new ultra-high definition format that we saw at the Consumer Electronics Show last month indicates to me that Sony is definitely behind 4K in a big way, not only with their televisions, but also through the studios, through the movie releases in the theatres. And, of course, they want to continue that content spread to the home in 4K. They've already got a very good a 4K projector, a home theater projector. Their Bravia 4K televisions that I saw at CES were incredible. They've also got an OLED 4K TV also on its way that was probably one of the best televisions I've ever seen. So 4K is going to be a big part of the Sony story moving forward, and I think the PS4 may play some part in that, maybe a possible way to use the PS4 as a kind of way to download content, access 4K content anyway. But all will be revealed on February 20. If you want to watch that teaser video, you can do it at techguide.com.au.
This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Now, Apple surprised everybody last week with the announcement of a new iPad. Well, not a new iPad as such, but a new capacity iPad, a 128 gig iPad, as a matter of fact. It's the fourth generation iPad, which was the device released last year in October. So this new product, which is out this week, is out tomorrow, as a matter of fact. I'm recording this on Monday, the 4th of February. The new device will be out from the 5th of February, so that's this week. It looks exactly like the original fourth generation, which came out a few months ago. But the only difference being is the new flash memory capacity has now been up to 128 gigabytes. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of you out there wishing that Apple had have released this before Christmas. This would have been a hot seller before Christmas, but I think Apple had their hands full supplying the iPad mini, the new iMac, so their production lines were probably at their full capacity producing those products. Hence the reason why I think the new iPad, the 128 gig iPad, maybe slipped into the 2013 production schedule. But as I mentioned, the 128 gig is double the capacity of the previous highest capacity of 64 gig. It'll be priced at $869 for the Wi-Fi only model and $1,009 for the Wi-Fi plus cellular version. So that's the 4G version there. Now, many are asking, well, why the need for all this data all of a sudden? Well, Apple themselves have said that some of the best users, their best customers have been businesses, including many in the Fortune 500, many Fortune 500 companies that are using iPad, deploying them on their network, allowing their workers to access to use the iPad using custom apps that require large amounts of data storage. A few examples would be, I understand Qantas pilots have just all been issued with iPads so that they don't need to carry around those heavy volumes of logs and other information that they need to carry in those roll-on suitcases that you'd see pilots walking onto their plane with. Now everything can be contained on the iPad, so hence the reason for a little bit more memory. In the medical field, there'll be a lot of doctors using the iPad to look at X-ray films, which are quite large files. Other things would be things like architects viewing CAD designs, that's computer aided design specifications and plans. So the more room you'd have to carry those kinds of files, and they are quite large files, then the more room you have on the device, the better. Well, Apple responded to that, and that's the main reason, I'd say, why the 128 gig iPad is now available. And I think moving forward from here, you'll probably see that Apple will make the 128 gigabyte capacity the new top capacity. I think 64 will be your mid-level capacity, and 32 is, in my opinion, I think will become the new entry-level capacity for the iPad. I think the 16 gig may be retained for the iPad 2 allow an entry-level product, but moving forward, I think those capacities are going to increase. We may see later this year the 128 gig also being offered for the iPhone 6 or 5S or whatever Apple decide to call the next iPhone. So keep an eye out for that. I've written a story about that at Tech Guide. There's no new pictures to offer because it looks exactly the same, but there's all that pricing that I mentioned and information about the processor, which is the same. You can read all that at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide Now, a Tech Guide review with Stephen Fenwick.
Our first review this week is a GPS product made by Navman, very popular GPS company. They've released a product called the My Truck. That's capital M-Y, My. That's their series of devices. But this is the My Truck, and it's designed specifically for truck drivers or drivers of larger vehicles. Now, you can't just drive a large truck or B double, as they're called. They're those the semi trailers that are in two parts. So the extra long semi trailers. What I've learned is a B double, and you can also not drive hazmat vehicles. That's hazmat is short for hazardous materials. Hazmat vehicles can't just drive that down any old street. And these other vehicles, just by their sheer size, means the truck drivers really need to find out roads that A, will allow them to drive a truck of that weight, also a truck of that size and height. And you can't just drive through any old tunnel either, because as we've seen in the past, there has been a couple of trucks stuck in various tunnels around Sydney because they didn't judge the height of their vehicle and the tunnel correctly. Hence the reason why Navman have jumped in with this product. Now, instead of referring to journals and other documents that can give them their approved local roads, they can now enter their route into the Navman My Truck, which has a 5-inch screen. It's also got a ruggedized interior, so it can handle a little bit of punishment in a cabin of a truck, and allows for truckies then to plot their routes and be allowed to then not be restricted in terms of roads that can cope with the size, their size, weight. It'll also advise them of sharp turns, steep inclines, taking the size and weight of their vehicle into consideration. It delivers info about petrol stations and rest stops as well. It also alerts drivers when they've been driving for more than a couple of hours. We know truckies put in some long sessions behind the wheel when they're on the job transporting their loads. But this will give them a bit of a heads up when it's been more than 2 hours that they've been driving, so they can find the nearest rest stop or petrol station. And it also comes too with other features you'd expect to find on a regular GPS device, things like live traffic reports, which are updated every 30 seconds. So you know you're getting the very latest and greatest information there. There's also lifetime map updates for Australia and New Zealand. So all the maps that are on this device are always going to be up to date. So this is a bit of a godsend for truck drivers who I've been asked in the past on radio if there were specific devices for truck drivers. I understand a reader contacted me to say Garmin also make a product dedicated to truckies. Well, now Navman have added one to the collection as well. If you want to read my full report on that device, you can do so at techguide.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Now, they say apps can do anything. This has been proven to me with this very latest app and sensor or app accessory, as I like to call them, that I'm about to talk about right now. This is the Kibachi app and Wi-Fi sensor for your plants. Now, anyone out there who doesn't have a green thumb, and that includes me, there's a lot of people who just naturally know what to do with their plants. They've got healthy plants. But if you're like me and the many other people who are struggling in this area, then the Kibachi product may just be the solution. Now, there are two parts to the product. One is the actual app, which is free. The other part is the sensor. Now, the sensor looks like a golf club, looks like a golf driver. The head of this device is what sticks out on top of the soil, whereas the long thin shaft is what is stuck into the soil of the plant. And what that sensor can do is that it can gather information about the plant and actually give the plant a voice. So the plant can tell you when it needs to be watered. So it can provide information like soil moisture, temperature, light intensity, and with the app matching the type of plant that the sensor is linked to or in connected to through the soil, you can have accurate information from the plant, and then the app can then tell you when the next time you need to water it, maybe spray the bit of mist, maybe add a bit of fertilizer, do things like that. So your plants are going to be healthier than ever. Now, the app itself has got a library of information and uses scientifically proven plant care models. developed with leading biologists. So you're not going to be led down the garden path, pardon the pun, with this app. You're going to be receive pretty accurate information so you can exactly calculate the requirements of your plant. It even takes into account the season we're in and also the climate zone we're living in. So it's a real no-can't-go-wrong kind of solution here that will let you know when your plant needs water, when it needs mist, fertilizer. You can even monitor your plants remotely through push notifications sent through the app. Now, this sounds like a dream come true for anyone who's a bit of a gardener or anyone who doesn't have a green thumb. Even those with a green thumb, I think this can help them become even better at taking care of their plants. The Kibachi app and sensor is priced at $99. It's available through iworldaustralia.com.au. There's a link at Tech Guide if you wanted to check that out. But look, if you really need to your plants, if your plants are suffering a little bit, this is the type of product that can help save them. And if you want to do that, you can use this app and sensor. It's a pretty cool little product when you think about it. You can read more about it at techguide.com.au. Well, our kids are back to school using various laptops and tablets, and maybe even you received a new tablet or smartphone for Christmas. Well, with the amount of these devices growing on your home network, a solid Wi-Fi connection is more important than ever. So if you experience any annoying Wi-Fi dead spots around your home when using your mobile or wireless devices, Netgear has a range of Wi-Fi extenders that will boost your existing wireless signal and improve your online experience. Universal compatibility means you can keep all of your current wireless equipment, and CD-less installation makes setup easy on mobile devices. Netgear has a Wi-Fi extender to suit any size household, from the compact wall plug Wi-Fi booster for mobile up to the 4-port dual band Wi-Fi range extender, which is perfect for streaming HD video content and maximizing your online home theater experience. So if you want to stay connected and boost your Wi-Fi coverage to improve your online experience in every corner of your home, check out Netgear's Wi-Fi range extenders at netgear.com.au/boost-my-Wi-Fi. Want to talk about one other app before we get on to our Tech Guide interview, and that is a gaming app for the iPad. Now, this is a pretty cool puzzle game. If you're into your puzzles and you own an iPad, I think The Room is definitely worth checking out. It's only $1.99, and it reminded me of that old Mac game, Myst. That's M-Y-S-T. It's one of the first CD-ROM games for the Mac. And for those who can remember it, for those who are old enough to remember it, you'll know that you need to solve a series of puzzles, you need to collect different pages, various clues to solve the next puzzle and so forth. Well, The Room has that kind of feel. It's called The Room because you're set in this one little place. It starts off with a table, and then there's a safe, and then there's something inside the safe, and there's something inside that, and then leads you along the path to and kind of tells a story along the way. It's got excellent graphics, really, really great atmospheric music as well, and because it makes excellent use of the iPad screen. So the touch screen allows you to zoom in and out on various parts of the puzzle, and you can drag and pull and do things to various panels and dials and keys and things like that on the screen. This is like a page-turning book. It's one of those apps that I found that once I started, I looked up and that 2.5 hours had gone by. So it's really engaging and well worth a try if you do own an iPad. It looks terrific on the Retina display iPad as well. The Room, it's available now from the App Store. It's only $1.99, and I think if you can cast your mind back to the old Myst game, it's definitely worth a look. I think The Room is very clever. A lot of clever puzzles, very, very well thought out. And I can't wait. It's made by Fireproof Games. I can't wait till they put out the next, maybe The Room 2 or some other kind of puzzle game. But those who enjoy a bit of a brain teaser will really dig The Room. Full report at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide. Now, a Tech Guide interview.
Well, our Tech Guide interview this week is with BlackBerry Managing Director Matthew Ball, who hosted an event late last week to announce BB10, the new operating system from Research in Motion, as well as to unveil two new devices, the Z10, which is an all touchscreen, 4.2-inch fully touchscreen device, and the Q10, which has a QWERTY keyboard, a full keyboard, as well as a small touchscreen as well. Now, this was a pretty significant announcement from BlackBerry. BlackBerry has been bleeding users, but not only at the consumer level, but also at the corporate level for some time. Now, this was the company that invented the smartphone, back with those original BlackBerries that put email in your pocket with great security. They linked you back to your corporate networks and had these excellent physical keyboards that let you snap. You can really write out a fast email on the spot using the device. But then a strange thing happened. The iPhone was released back in 2007 that completely turned the smartphone market on its head. BlackBerry really struggled to keep up with this new trend with smartphones and touchscreens, and have ever since been sliding. Their market share has been sliding downwards. They've attempted a couple of touchscreen devices, but they've failed miserably, with just from a combination of the device being very poor and the operating system not working very well, not being very very conducive to being used with a touchscreen device. I think they were trying to hang on so much to the traditional BlackBerry operating system and their users, and the two didn't really meld very well together. Well, anyway, fast forward to 2013, and I've called this release a bit of a reinvention of the company. Not only are there new devices and operating system, but BlackBerry themselves have actually changed their name. Now, the company behind BlackBerry used to be called Research in Motion. That is no longer the case. The company is simply called BlackBerry to avoid any confusion. So that's one step in the reinvention. The other step is the unveiling of the software. We got a sneak peek late last year and with word that there was going to be some devices to run with this new BB10 software. Just out of interest, the BlackBerry operating system has leapt from 7 to 10. There was no 8 or 9. So we've gone from 7 to 10 with this new operating system, and it is optimized for a touchscreen. Now, I got a chance to have a play with the Z10. My full story about my experience is at techguide.com.au, and I found it to be very fast, a huge leap forward from what they've offered in the past in terms of a touchscreen device. The Z10 was the only device they had on hand at the event last week, and it had a 4.2-inch screen. There are no buttons on the device at all, no back key, no home key, nothing. This is all controlled with gestures, so gesturing, stroking in from the top, the left, the right, the bottom, all present different options for the system, where you want to look through the open apps, you want to go to your work apps, your personal apps. It does segregate the device. It partitions the device for personal use and work use. And with the trend of BYOD, that's bring your own device, now becoming ever popular, the BlackBerry just may see a little resurgence when the new devices are released through Telstra and Optus in March. But we had a chance to sit down with Matthew Ball, and here's what he had to say. Well, Matt, thanks for joining us. We're here at the BB10 launch. What does this mean for BlackBerry?
Hey, Stephen. Nice to see you again, as always. Look, the launch of BlackBerry 10 is huge for us in the Australian market. It's huge for us also globally. It marks BlackBerry 10 launch day marks the a pretty significant event in mobility history with the launch of BlackBerry 10. So we've announced, as you know, the Z10 and also the Q10 device. And we've also announced that we are changing our name globally from RIM, or Research in Motion, to BlackBerry. So what does that mean for consumers, and what does that mean for Australians is, Australians are massive users of technology. You know this, and we've had this conversation lots of different times. When it comes to smartphones and mobility, mm-hmm. the Australian market is 96% touch market, which means a lot of Australians, 96% of smartphone users, are walking around with a big touch screen.
Yep.
What we're launching today with a touch screen is a device that has all the essence of what people like about BlackBerry and reinvented the way a smartphone works. Mm-hmm. So, mate, it's an impressive device. It adapts to how you use it. It's intuitive. It's got, you know, it's got some really impressive intelligence about it. Just great stuff.
You mentioned the word reinvention. That's a pretty apt description of what the company's going through now. The new devices, new name. Now, there's obviously some ground to be made up in the years gone by. Would you admit that there's some work to do there to catch up with the likes of the iPhone and Android?
So I think that it's fair to say, so we invented the smartphone category, which is great. I think it's fair to say with what we're launching today, we'll be as significant in the smartphone category as the invention of, and the launch of BlackBerry when it was first brought to market. I think that in answer to your question around ground to make up, absolutely. Yeah, I think that from a technology and innovation perspective, BlackBerry's always been highly innovative, but over the last 12 to 18 months have had to really focus their efforts on that transition piece. And, you know, that's been tough because we've had to make some tough calls around where we have prioritised resources. Do we prioritise resources around continuing to innovate on an existing platform or, you know, making the tough call and a switch across to a brand new platform? And, you know, as I was speaking to you about earlier, I think that as an organisation, we did a great job of squeezing every last drop of opportunity out of the existing platform, as you know, a lot of our competitors are doing now as they're starting to age. But with a new platform, mate, it's brand new, so
absolutely
significant.
Now, who's your target? I understand you've obviously got a strong corporate presence, but you want to grow the consumer sector, I'd imagine.
Yes, absolutely. So we'll be investing more than we ever have into the Australian market to tell Australians about BlackBerry 10 and you know, some of the key features that the device has. In terms of our who we're targeting, the lines between a consumer and a business customer, they're not there anymore. They started to blur, you know, 18 months ago, but they're just no longer there. You know, people are, you know, there's Stephen Fenwick at home, there's Stephen Fenwick at work, there's Stephen Fenwick is, you know, as part of a sports
team. You're
talking
like I've got multiple personalities here.
That's
but just on that, that's a good point, actually, because one thing that impressed me with the presentation was the whole work-life balance features of the device, where you can partition the device for work and for personal use.
Yes.
And with the BYOD, the bring your own device trend growing in the workplace, yes, that can only help you guys grow sales.
Without a doubt. So we want to be the BYOD device of choice for both consumers and for enterprise customers. So as you saw today, with the flick of your thumb and selection of personal or work, you have two, essentially it's like having two phones in one, so that you have the device is secure down to what's called the encryption level, which means you can't get to it. Being able to have two separate partitions between your work life and your personal life. And why that's good for you as a person or as a consumer is you can keep your personal life separate from work. You can switch off at the weekends, you can switch off after hours if you need to. And why that's good for a... and also, if you leave an organisation, a lot of BYOD devices, if someone is leaving an organisation, that device will get wiped and given back to the end user. Now, in terms of what we have is, because it's two separate partitions, the work, if you were to leave your employer, you would just, that work partition would just simply be erased. And now, why all that's great for companies is, a lot of them have got significant BlackBerry infrastructure, and also they know it's secure. You know, security piece is so important for businesses, and mm-hmm. you know, that's our heritage is around that security piece, and we're starting to see how much more important that's becoming in the market.
Let's talk availability. It's going to be offered to Telstra and Optus customers?
Yes.
So when can we expect it, do you think?
So we'll be launching in similar time frame to the US market, which is sometime in March. Pricing hasn't been announced yet, but absolutely available at Australia's two largest carriers, Telstra and Optus, and a lot of their retail channels underneath.
And they're excited to get behind this, or what's their reaction been?
Look, we've had phenomenal feedback, not just from Telstra and Optus, various different teams and levels within those organisations, but also our enterprise customers and our business channel partners that, you know, that serve our significant customer base here locally. Mm-hmm. Everyone that sees it loves it. They do.
Let's talk apps as well. Now, that's a huge attraction for smartphone users now, especially consumers. There are, I understand, more than 70,000 apps ready to go.
Yes.
Is that Tell us a bit more about that.
Sure. So, look, one of the things that was important for us is that we launched with the things that were pain points for customers as we did a lot of research around, you know, why did people like BlackBerry and why did they not like BlackBerry? And the things that we needed to improve on were around browser speed and volume of apps and multimedia capabilities. So the browser speed is the fastest browser, bar none, desktop or mobile. The range of applications, we needed to work really hard with the development community. We needed to make it easy, we needed to make it simple, and we needed to show them that developing on the BlackBerry platform is worthwhile for them spending their time on. So we're launching with over 70,000 apps, and there's already more that are coming on board. So in terms of that range of applications, it's a full suite from, you know, lifestyle to financial to entertainment to personal style applications. Okay. And entertainment and games.
Well, sounds like an exciting year ahead for BlackBerry in 2013. We really appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Always great to see you, Stephen. Thank you.
Answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
Now, hands up anyone out there who has seen or may own a smartphone with a cracked screen. There's a lot of people walking around with cracked screens on their smartphones. And it's not hard to do. These things are made of glass, remember. You drop this device and boom, it's broken. I think that's one thing. When people drop their device on the ground, they slowly pick it up, turn it over, and pray that that device, the screen on the device hasn't been shattered. Unfortunately, for many people, that's not the case, and they're presented with a cracked screen. Now, the question I had through the Tech Guide forum was, is a cracked screen covered by warranty? Well, it is not, unfortunately, because 99 times out of 100, a cracked screen is the result of a human error, a human interaction that has caused the device to break. Simple as that. If you drop your device, that is the your own fault. It's not anything to do with the build quality or the phone, normal wear and tear of the phone. The warranty only covers things like the device not working as described, the build quality, things like that. So anything accidental that happens to the phone, like you maybe drop it in water, for example, which is another common thing happens with smartphones, or drop it and crack the screen, that is unfortunately not covered by warranty. Now, there is another thing that may come to the rescue if the user has taken this out with their plan, and that's insurance. Insurance is the option given to us by our operators to, for a few bucks a month, some I think of 7, 8, 9, possibly even more, that gives users the option of having their device insured. So if that is the case, if it is insured and you do happen to drop it, then you can make a claim and then have it repaired. So that's an insurance claim though, not a warranty claim. Now, it's very rare, I think, that a company or manufacturer would repair an accidental drop for free under warranty. That it's no harm in trying if you can convince the manufacturer. I think there'd be many a person lined up at Apple's genius bars saying, pleading for their new iPhone with now a cracked screen to be repaired for free. But Apple know the limits of their warranty as well as anybody, and it normally costs $150, $200 to replace your screen. So, unfortunately, cracked screens are not covered by a warranty. Worth checking with the manufacturer. It's not going to cost you anything to ask, maybe just the price of a new screen. But if you're insured, the good news is that you will probably be able to make a claim on your insurance to get it repaired. Well, but the bottom line is, though, keep a tight grip on those smartphones, people. If you drop them, you may not be covered by warranty. And that's our program for another week. Anything we spoke about in this episode can be found at our website, techguide.com.au. And we also love hearing from our listeners and our readers, so you can get in touch with us here at info@techguide.com.au and keep sending in those questions to the help desk through our forum. So if you send it to the Tech Guide forum, we may be reading your question out here right on the Tech Guide podcast. Thanks too for our good sponsors, Netgear, the brand you can trust for all your Wi-Fi needs. That's it for episode 32. Thanks for listening. We look forward to your company next week. So in the meantime, stay safe and stay connected.